You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And just like that, it's all over. Welcome in to what may be one of the more deflating post-game episodes of Locked On Rockets, the only home for daily podcast commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. The Rockets lost at home in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, 101-92. They lose the series 4-3. Golden State advances to the NBA Finals, where they will play Cleveland for a fourth consecutive year. The Rockets were led by James Harden with 32 points, Eric Gordon with 23, Clint Capella with 20 points, 9 boards, but ultimately the game decided by the Rockets shooting a woeful 7 of 44 from behind the arc. They had such tremendous effort, despite them missing so many threes and having no Chris Paul with the hamstring injury. Turns out that was a grade 2, which despite all the best efforts, there's no way you're playing on a grade 2 hamstring injury after just 4 days. Quite frankly, it's amazing he was walking as well as he was. But despite an incredible game from an effort perspective, Capella 20-9, 9 of 10, PJ Tucker 14 points, 12 rebounds, Trevor Ariza, great defense, 7 rebounds, but 0 of 12 from the field, 0 points, and the Rockets just collectively could not buy a 3, Harden 2 of 13, Eric Gordon 2 of 12, and against a Golden State Warriors team with 4 All-Stars that also shot 41% from 3, 16 of 39, it's just not going to be enough. It's a testament to the Rockets' desire, their chemistry, their heart, that this game was even within single digits, a game in which they shot barely over 15% from 3, a historic outlier, had no Chris Paul, and yet the Warriors, with their 4 All-Stars, led by Kevin Durant, 34 points and above 50% shooting, shot over 40% from 3 with great performances from Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, two prior MVPs of the league. The fact that the Rockets weren't even close was a testament to their grit, how hard they played. They led by as much as 17 in the first half, again by double digits at the break, but a combination of poor shots, poor officiating, and no Chris Paul to stop the bleeding in terms of the runs, or perhaps an alternative to the threes with more of a mid-range game, it did them in. And to start with, I'm not going to go too far into the box score, because the reality, what we do here at Locked On Rockets throughout the season, we look at each box score, especially in the playoffs, through the lens of predictive value. What does it mean going forward? At this point, the season's over. The Rockets lost Game 7, the Warriors are on to the finals again, and at this point, the next meaningful game for the Rockets, as heartbreaking as it is not until the season opens in October. And even when the season opens, you've got to fight through 82 games just to get home court advantage again, the same way they did this year, and ultimately, after all that effort, it still failed them in Game 7. Well, not the home court, because the fans at Toyota Center were incredible, the loudest I've ever heard the arena, but ultimately, just too many variables went against them, and initial thoughts, like I said, less about the box score. To me, it's one of the more heartbreaking losses in franchise history. I would go as far as to say in Houston sports history, because this team was so good. To me, it's the ultimate what-if of a season. And yes, they can run it back. Even the guys that are free agents, the Marquise, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, they have bird rights. They are able to keep this group together. Even Luke Baamute, who, because of the dislocated shoulder, didn't play in Game 7, you're still probably going to be able to keep him, if you want, with the mid-level exception. So you can bring this core back. You can also look to upgrade it with a LeBron or a Paul George. We'll talk more about that as our normal 3 points recap moves forward. But even if you do all those things, think about how hard the journey was to win 65 games, to go through all of this, to get to Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. And then going up against the four-headed monster of the Golden State Warriors with just one all-star in James Harden, with Chris Paul having to sit out with what ended up being a grade 2 hamstring injury. I got it wrong, by the way. Apologies. I thought from the way he was walking, the way his teammates were describing it in the aftermath, that it was a grade 1. I think maybe he left the arena on Thursday night after Game 5 thinking it was. Unfortunately, the MRI on Friday morning revealed otherwise, and that's when the tone around the injury started to change, ultimately finding out, as I said, from Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, that it was a grade 2, which there's just no way to play. You can't tough that out just 4 days after the injury. It sucks. It is what it is. And if you want any consolation for that, injuries are a part of the game. Just ask the Boston Celtics, who lost at home in the Eastern Conference Finals in Game 7 with Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, two All-Stars, on the sidelines. It does happen, unfortunately. But what makes this so crushing for the Rockets in terms of franchise history and, I would say, the broader Houston sports is that it wasn't just no Chris Paul. It would have been one thing if there was no Chris Paul and then the Rockets went out and lost by 20 or 30 points. There was no Chris Paul, and certainly that played a role, because with the threes not falling, you certainly could have used his mid-range game at one point or another, or in mitigating turnovers, had far too many of those for the game yet again. With James Harden, far too much pressure on him. He ended up with five turnovers, the Rockets 12 as a team. But if you don't have Chris Paul, that's enough. And if you lose, as I said, by 20, it sucks. But at that point, you would be able to take it as just a bad break, the same way I think the Celtics can, and move on. The 7 of 44 from 3, many of those wide, wide open, a historic outlier, including an 0 for 27 stretch in the middle of the game. That's not something that you can try harder. As I said, the Rockets' effort, the way guys like Clint Capella and PJ Tucker were getting second chance opportunities all game, that's the only thing that even kept them in it. James Harden and Eric Gordon shooting a combined 4 of 25 from 3, still getting 55 points because of how well they attacked the rim. That level of superb effort is what kept the Rockets in it. Even if you want to cite fatigue, the threes stopped falling long, long before we got to the end of the game. I mean, they were just 6 of 23 in the first half, which was barely over 25%. So don't tell me that it was all fatigue. Did that play some role? Yes, but it certainly wasn't all of it. The Rockets just unfortunately missed a lot of good looks, and sometimes that happens. It's not a matter of needing more focus. That's what I've said throughout. If you have a rough game like that from three, it's not like you make more threes by trying harder. Just sometimes you have a game like that where they don't go your way, and unfortunately it came that way for the Rockets at the wrong time. But if it was just that, the Rockets might could have overcome it if they had Chris Paul for more of a stabilizing presence to reduce the turnovers. If you had Chris Paul's mid-range game, which is exactly why you signed him, a big part of it, I should say, along with just having another all-star out there to combat the four with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green for the Warriors. There's that what if. And then there's the officiating, which for a second game in a row completely changed the momentum after the Rockets went into the half with a double-digit lead. Actually, it changed it before. The Rockets probably should have had a lead of 15-plus points late in the first half. There were clear fouls on two shots by James Harden from three, neither called. And one of the ones that went uncalled led directly to a transition sequence in which the Warriors got a wide-open three for Klay Thompson, which he drilled. That was bad enough. I thought they would regroup the officials. I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt, since I'm sure they were notified at the half they missed the calls. It got worse. The third quarter just completely out of control. Yet again, no fouls called going to the bucket for James Harden or Eric Gordon. A laughable moving screen by Jordan Bell, the most obvious one you will ever see, setting Steph Curry free when the Warriors were making their run to take command of the game. And yes, the Rockets missed a lot of shots in that run that could have dulled the momentum. But there were countless missed calls in so many different facets in terms of the Warriors getting a call. One, I remember Kevin Durant, he missed a shot, complained about it. The whistle came nearly 2 seconds after whatever occurred when he released the basketball. Just a complete double standard again from one end of the court to the other. And it was bad enough. I've retweeted in my Twitter timeline at Ben Dubose, neutral observers throughout the league that went as far as to call it like they were watching the WWE. It was really, really bad. And yet again, despite that, it was a single-digit game. That's what's so incredible about all of this, is that despite all of these three things, to me, the three most important variables, the absence of Chris Paul, the historic outlier of 7 of 44 from 3, including an 0 of 27 stretch, and what felt like criminally bad officiating from about midway through the second quarter up until about the beginning of the fourth. And yet, despite all of that, the Rockets' grit, their tenacity was so much that the game never really was out of reach. And that's what makes it, in my opinion, the ultimate in what-if games. And that's what makes it so heartbreaking, because it would be easy if there was just a simple cause. If you could say that, well, when Chris Paul went out, they just weren't good enough. And that's a part of the equation, sure. But despite that, they were up double digits at the half, 24 minutes away from the NBA Finals, and even if Chris Paul couldn't have played late in the series or not at all, they would have still been large favorites over the Cleveland Cavaliers to win the third championship in franchise history. If it was just a matter of, well, bad luck with the Chris Paul injury, run it back next year, that's fine. But the Chris Paul injury, compounded by an all-time historic outlier, 7 of 44 from 3, and the officiating miscues for a second consecutive game contributing directly to big Warriors momentum, in this case, getting it down to 11 from 17 at the break, and then the 33-15 third quarter yet again, it's just crushing. That's the best way that I know to sum it up, because these Rockets were good enough. They should be remembered as an all-time great NBA team, and yet they're not going to have a ring, and that sucks. It is what it is, and sometimes this happens in one-game scenarios. One of the ways that you can overcome this sort of thing is to not get to a Game 7, and I'm sure that's what Daryl Morey is going to think about this in terms of, because lots of Game 7s are really weird. There's lots of fatigue on both sides. Players are just dead. They're exhausted. There's so much tired legs. There's so much randomness. One or two calls can shape the momentum, etc., etc., etc. And if the Rockets were better, and I know that's crazy to say that you need to be so good to close out a team with four All-Stars in six games or less, but ultimately, that's what it felt like the Rockets needed to do, because in this one, boy, they were right there, if not for seemingly every variable going against them in Game 7 and still losing by single digits. So at the same time, you can't, in my opinion, feel anything but pride for this group. They battled to the bitter end. Their heart, their effort, their talent. It was an incredible team. And ultimately, between playing a great Warriors team, all these things aside, let's give credit. The Warriors are a historically great team. They are a deserving defending champion, as talented a roster as the NBA has ever put to, has ever seen. But because of that, to come that close to scaling the mountain and still fall short, it stings. And I think at least for a few days, before you move forward, you've got to come to grips with what happened. And in my opinion, just a rough night that the Rockets, they showed what they're made of. I think they should make you proud. I think they showed you why they're a great team. But ultimately, a series of things went, all went catastrophically wrong at the wrong moment. And it took all of those things happening just for them to lose by single digits. At this point, it is what it is. I'll take a quick break. Now, moving forward, because I wanted to lead with just broader perspective, where things are at, why, in my opinion, that game was so crushing. I think there's a clear case to bring this team back. If you worried about Clint Capela going into this series, I think you saw him defensively making an impact throughout the series. His rebounding numbers were fantastic. And then when the Rockets needed him most, even on a night when they were just historically awful from three, Clint Capela's 20 points were a big part of what kept them in it. And if anything, you could say they went away from him too early. He had 8 field goal attempts in the first half, and I believe just 2 in the second. Clint delivered on the biggest stage. He got better as the series moved along. So if you're worried about paying him the max, I wouldn't be. He proved throughout this playoff run, first outplaying both Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert, and then holding his own against the Warriors, having his best game in Game 7. This is a guy who is still not even 25 years old, remarkably young, great attitude. He's going to get better. Chris Paul, say what you will. I know there are concerns about soft tissue injuries. I know he missed 20-plus games this season, but when he's right, he's a top 10 player in the league, and he won the Utah series for you. 41-10, no turnovers, one of the best performances you'll ever see. He just had a bad injury at a bad time. It sucks. It happens. Maybe you can reduce his usage even more to where you get him down to 30 minutes a game during the season. But it's not like you can let Chris Paul walk and then all of a sudden use that money elsewhere. It doesn't work that way. Because the only way you're able to keep him, of course, you traded for him, you have bird rights. So it's not like you can play fantasy GM and say, well, if I let Chris Paul go, I can bring in this other superstar. And I wouldn't be willing to do that anyway, because the chemistry between Chris and James Harden, the leadership in that locker room, as good as it gets. Incredible culture, incredible teamwork. And I have no doubt that Chris will be brought back. I think there's probably a happy medium with Chris at 33 years old, where he doesn't get the full 5-year supermax, but ultimately, I think he'll be back in a Rockets uniform, and he should be. Trevor Ariza, I know it was a bad Game 7, but think about the workload you're asking of him. 40 minutes a night, no Luke Bamute because of the dislocated shoulder and the mental after effects of that. Trevor Ariza, even at 32, again, as with Chris Paul, you might can reduce their usage a little bit, and I think if Bamute were able to play more, it would have helped Ariza as well, because you're not running his tank all the way to empty to compensate for the lack of Bamute's defense, because you don't have Luke's not giving you enough offense for his defense to be playable. And even Luke Bamute, I think Luke, it's going to be easily forgotten based on how poor his playoff run went. But his playoff run went poorly because he didn't trust the shoulder, which he dislocated twice, and we'll see if he decides to have surgical intervention there. Over the balance of the season, he was a huge part of the Rockets' success, and if anything, based on the shoulder, based on the subpar playoff run, it should make it all the more easier, in my opinion, to keep him at the mid-level exception, which is the only thing the Rockets will likely have to offer him, because they're not going to be a below-the-cap team, and they don't have his bird rights after signing him for basically the minimum last summer. And in addition to being able to bring back your free agents, keep in mind, this was year one of the Chris Paul James Harden experiment. It's very possible you see organic growth as well from being able to bring back this core, this team, for another run. Think back to Golden State. Look how much better this team continues to get with each year they play together. And yes, adding Kevin Durant helps. I know that. And we'll talk about that, a potential for a move like that, in the third segment. But in and of itself, if all the Rockets can do is bring back this current team, in my opinion, you should be plenty excited going back into next season. It's a core that won 65 games this year. It's a core that went 8-2 through the first two rounds of the playoffs, that took the greatest team ever assembled in the Warriors to 7 games, a place where they've never been, that earned the NBA's respect, that only lost after Chris Paul, one of the top 10 players in the league, went down at the most inopportune time. You can bring back this roster largely as is, and maybe with a couple of tweaks, if you could bring in one more big, one more backup guard you could trust. I think that would certainly help. But this team, as is good enough to beat the Warriors. They proved that. Even without Chris Paul, this game was there for the taking. And if you win Game 7, you probably win the entire thing. That's why it hurts so much. But remember that the reason you hurt that much is because you know the team was that good. If they weren't, it would be a lot easier to roll your eyes, fire off the hot takes like you did last year after Game 6, when we just figured out that the model with one star with James Harden simply was not going to work in this year's NBA. It was easier to sort of withdraw because you knew that team wasn't good enough. And yes, there was a lot of talk about acquisitions you could make to get better. Unfortunately, Daryl Morey was able to do that with getting Chris Paul, and then, of course, adding onto it with P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute. This year, I don't have that feeling. Even in the Game 7, I thought Harden kept attacking. I thought that even though his three-point stroke deserted him again, and, well, not just Harden, the entire team, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, no one could shoot from three tonight, even when they were wide open, but they kept attacking the rim. Harden with 32, Gordon with 23. The defense, by and large, was fairly commendable. I thought the Warriors really had to make a ton of tough shots in the second half. And, again, the game was single digits. So even if the Rockets aren't able to do much but tweak around the edges, make a few adjustments at the margins, this team proved to you that they're good enough. And I think that perspective in and of itself is something you need to remember going into the offseason. And as far as some of the lazy takes that are out there about Harden, spare me. There were a couple of possessions in the fourth quarter, and he was absolutely gassed. A game in which, again, the Rockets' effort from the outset was incredible. Harden, the Rockets' one all-star, playing a team with four. And when his minutes got into the 40s, there was a little bit of fatigue. And he had to drive to the rim more than ever because the three-point stroke deserted not only himself, but the entire team, to where they felt in the fourth quarter like it was a Herculean task and pretty much impossible to even get threes. And so they had to drive to the bucket more. And another thing, I mentioned the Harden tape because I'm seeing some of those lazy narratives out there in the national media. Let's kill another one about the Mike D'Antoni component, because I'm seeing takes about the high volume of threes. The Rockets were 7 of 44, so I'm sure there's some natural inclination from some who didn't really watch the game or watch the NBA that regularly. Why don't you take fewer threes? The Warriors took 39 of them. They simply made 16. And these are two teams that over the balance of the season are not really that different in terms of the depth and quality of their shooters. The Rockets just had a bad night. They couldn't desert the three. That's too big of a part of their offense. It's not like in, what is this? This is Game 7, so you play 82 games and 17 in the playoffs. So this is Game 99 for the Rockets, and that's not even counting the preseason. And because in the middle of the third quarter, you're what, below 20% from three? You're going to somehow start playing a different way, all with the same personnel? No, the system wasn't the problem. James Harden wasn't the problem. Just unfortunately, you missed a lot of shots at the wrong time, and sometimes that happens. And Golden State, their system, really, not all that different, at least in terms of reliance on the three ball. They just made them at the right time. Tip your cap, they're defending champions, and they proved worthy tonight, despite all the what ifs we're doing here in Houston. Final segment, though. You could make the case that, and I just did, that the Rockets were extremely unlucky tonight. That if Chris Paul hadn't gotten injured, if the Rockets hadn't been historically bad, barely above 15%, 7 of 44 from 3, if you hadn't had absurd officiating from the Scott Foster-led crew. By the way, the Rockets 17-5 in the playoffs the last 2 years in games that Scott Foster did not officiate, and they're 0-6 in games that he did. He was the guy who, I mentioned a lot of bad calls earlier. I forgot the four-point play, which was a clear continuation, would have put the Rockets up 13 in the fourth quarter. That was wiped away. That was Scott Foster as well. To put that guy in charge of a Rockets Game 7 in Houston was downright criminal. The NBA should have known better, and they deserve every bit of skepticism they're getting for that. But despite all those variables, you can make a case that bringing back the team is good enough. But part of what makes the Warriors as great as they are is that they weren't satisfied. The Warriors, 2 years ago were in a very similar spot to this. Now, technically, it was the NBA Finals compared to the Western Conference Finals, but let's be real. We know these were the NBA Finals. And back then, in the 2016 analogy, the Warriors had a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. It was the greatest team in franchise history, actually in NBA history, with 73 wins. And there were a ton of extenuating circumstances that led to their ultimate 4-3 loss, including losing at home on their own floor to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Draymond Green got suspended for Game 5. Steph Curry was never quite the same after tweaking his Achilles. Or not his Achilles, his MCL, excuse me. Still back in Chris Paul mode a little bit. And the Warriors were undoubtedly the better team than the Cavaliers. And you can make a case, based on the results of the season and the results of the series, that the Rockets are a better team than these Warriors, just as those Warriors are a better team than the Cavaliers. And that if the Warriors just ran it back as is, and the Rockets running it back as is, that would be enough. And it could be. As I said earlier, you can't dismiss that if that's what happens and say that this team doesn't have enough. I think they prove to you they do. It just sucks that there's such a huge hill to climb to get back to this Game 99, this setting in Toyota Center, an opportunity to win. But the Warriors, as we know, weren't satisfied. The first thing they did was have Draymond Green call Kevin Durant in the parking lot. We know the rest of the story, and they became the most talented team ever assembled in the NBA, the 2017 champions, and undoubtedly, in a week or so, the 2018 champions as well. The Rockets can do that same thing. LeBron James, Paul George, you can go for the kill. No team has ever been this close to the Warriors with Kevin Durant. To beat them 3 times and have them down double digits twice at the half in Game 6 and Game 7, I know it's a loss. It's frustrating because the Rockets were so good. But boy, did Houston belong. They showed something that no one in the Durant era has, the Durant Golden State era, and what many didn't even think was possible. And you better believe that if you're a star in the NBA that's not on Golden State, the Houston scenario is one of the only ones, if not the only one, where you can actually see a path to beating those guys. And in Houston, it's more than a path because I think we can all agree they probably should have won this series, as is. So LeBron James, Paul George. I actually said Paul James a couple weeks ago. Now I'm merging those together too often. I'm tired. It's been a long series. But LeBron, Paul George, whatever big names are out there, free agency, trade, Houston should be in the market for those guys, and they will. There's no direct pathway to cap room for the Rockets, but ultimately, I don't think they have to have that cap room. I think all the Rockets need, in my opinion, it's 2 questions. Is Eric Gordon a positive asset? And after this series, I think he clearly is. And can you move Ryan Anderson with 2 first-round draft picks? And I think the answer is yes. If you believe that those 2 questions can be answered with yes, and I don't know why Eric Gordon at a 2-year contract, just $13 million a season, especially coming off what he's done in the Western Conference Finals, would not be an attractive asset, even if, say, a Cleveland or Oklahoma City or whoever the team may be doesn't want Gordon themselves because they're rebuilding, that's fine. If he's a positive asset, you can trade him either later in the summer, at the deadline, whatever it may be. The bottom line is getting Eric Gordon a better scenario for you than letting the marquee player leave for 0 compensation? In my opinion, I think the answer is clearly yes, especially with some of the things we saw from Eric, including 23 points in Game 7. Even with his 3-point stroke not falling, he was still very successful as a facilitator, even in the absence of Chris Paul, making things happen off the dribble for himself, attacking the rim, even some nice passes from time to time. That's part one. Part two is the Ryan Anderson contract. And they couldn't move it last summer. Well, it's not they couldn't move it. I think they were unwilling to move it for Carmelo Anthony because I think even last summer, 2 first-round picks, and of course for the Rockets, they couldn't even give up 2 first-round picks until 2020 and 2022 because the 2018 pick had already been given up in the Chris Paul trade, and you can't give up first-round picks in consecutive years. But A, I think the Rockets weren't willing to mortgage the farm for Carmelo Anthony, and we understand why after watching how poorly the three-headed monster, or so-called monster, was in Oklahoma City. And Anderson had 3 years left on his contract, and the soonest first-round pick the Rockets could accompany to get rid of it was in 2020. after this year's draft passes, I believe on June 21st, the Rockets can trade their 2019 first and their 2021, excuse me, getting tongue-tied here, but that's two first-round draft picks in the next 3 years. That is a much better bargaining position than they were in a year ago, and Ryan Anderson's deal is now 2 years, $40 million, rather than 3 years, $60 million. That's a huge difference. Now, even if Cleveland, Oklahoma City still says, we don't care about the picks, we just don't want to pay Ryan Anderson that money. Okay, then you can find a third team, either to trade Ryan into cap room, or say, I've mentioned the Phoenix scenario before, where you offload Ryan to the third team, give the draft pick to them for taking his contract on, and then you send a combination of non-guaranteed contracts and expiring contracts. For example, the Suns have some big ones, Tyson Chandler, Jared Dudley, Alan Williams. And between that, if you can offload Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, that's $33 million combined. You can fit LeBron James. If he opts in, it would need to be an opt-in and trade. That's by far the most reasonable route for the Rockets to not only get a star, but also keep the current team they have together. You can also get Paul George to opt in. Or who knows? There are all sorts of trade situations that might play out the same way. For example, Jimmy Butler got dealt last summer, but there was a very limited market for him because, of course, there was a lot of uncertainty over his contract situation. Or Paul George is a better example because Paul George was about to enter the final year of his contract, but the market contracted because there were so few teams that he would give any sort of either nod that he would re-sign with or were willing to take that risk. So it's not that the Rockets need to have the best trade offer of any team in the league. It's that you need to have one that is better for that team than the player leaving for no compensation. And in my opinion, Eric Gordon is a positive asset, and be it to the team losing a star directly or to a third team, I think you can make Ryan Anderson into a positive asset if you're giving multiple first-round picks and prospects. The Rockets do have some attractive young players, Jochi, Isaiah Hartenstein, that are not exactly nothing. So you could even throw Chinonu Anuaku as well. There's three guys right there that could have been first-rounders under better circumstances. You can trade enough in terms of picks and prospects to get rid of the Anderson contract. And is Eric Gordon positive? If you believe you can do that, and I think the Rockets can, then they should be able to be in the market for big names. And ultimately, that's what I expect them to do. Because yes, you could bring back the current team, and I think that's fine as a fallback. You still might be good enough, but I think what this series showed you, above all else, is that if it comes down to a Game 7, crazy bleep can happen. You can have Chris Paul tweak a hamstring at the very end of a game that you were wanting to go up 3-2. You can shoot 7-44 in the decisive Game 7. You can get hosed by some awful officiating. The way the Warriors haven't had to deal with stuff like that is, really, this was the first Game 7 they've even been in since adding Kevin Durant. They've been so damn good talent-wise, they went for the kill shot and were able to successfully land it, that this was the first time they'd even been put in that situation. And of course, because they had four All-Stars, they were more immune to various factors than the Rockets were with their two. So, for the Rockets, while you can bring back the current team and say that they have a very good shot at the Warriors as is, I don't expect Daryl Morey to rest on his laurels. What made Golden State what they are is that instead of saying, after that Cavs loss in Game 7, which was an ultimate what-if, just like tonight is for the Rockets, that, well, we can run it back. And they could have, and they might have won the title anyway. But instead, they went out, got Kevin Durant, and they became so good that they couldn't even get back to a Game 7. In fact, it took them 2 years until this one against the Rockets, and it just so happened that one of the Rockets' stars happened to blow a tire right before everything was really going to be decided. Ultimately, landing that kill shot was what got Golden State to this Herculean task, this mountain in the first place. And now the Rockets, this summer, building off a season which they won a franchise-best 65 games, took the defending champion and almost certainly eventual champion Warriors to 7 games, by far pushed them harder than anyone else has in the Kevin Durant era. They're an attractive team. Who wouldn't want to be a part of this if you're a competitor, if you're a star, especially in today's NBA where it is so tough to get to this level? And I think Daryl Morey, he's acutely aware that as good as the Rockets are positioned now, the Warriors were positioned that way or better 2 years ago, and they didn't settle. And because of that, I'm pretty confident that the Rockets won't settle as well. It's an arms race, and we'll pick this up in late June when I'm sure the Rockets are kicking the tires. Maybe not formally, because technically you're not allowed to have negotiations with players under contract, but we know the NBA doesn't regulate player-to-player contact, so we'll see if James Harden and Chris Paul are able to work their magic on LeBron James or Paul George or whoever it may be, the same way that James Harden worked his magic on Chris Paul this time a year ago. So with that, we will wrap up today's show. Apologies for going a little long, but there's so many thoughts after a crushing Game 7 loss. And this isn't the end. I do want to say thanks to y'all for tuning in throughout the season. Not the ending we all wanted, but still a wildly successful year for the Rockets. A very successful one for the show here at Locked On Rockets. And if you stick with me through the offseason, we'll have plenty of coverage as well. Because with the NBA, part of what makes the Warriors, really more than part, the biggest aspect of what makes them so unbeatable or seemingly unbeatable, we shouldn't call them that anymore because the Rockets were good enough, so I'll take that back. But what makes them so difficult to defeat is the big fish they landed in Kevin Durant 2 years ago. The Rockets did one last year in Chris Paul, and now they're positioning themselves, as just described, to potentially land another one this summer. And as they go through that pursuit, as well as anything else they might do around the edges, then we'll break it all down in the coming days and weeks here at Locked On Rockets. For one final time in the regular season, I'll sign off. Again, I'm Ben DuBose, your host. Follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Thanks so much for listening to us throughout the season. But please stay tuned. We'll be here in the off season for you as well. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to us, subscribe to us, leave us 5-star reviews. That's how we're able to remain financially viable, the only daily podcast covering the Rockets, the way we make the business model work. And as I said, just because the season is over doesn't mean the podcast is over, because the Rockets, I expect them to have a very active off season. Got the 4 big names of their own, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, as free agents. We know that Daryl Morey is going to be looking for big fish like he always is, so plenty more to discuss in the days and weeks ahead right here at Locked On Rockets. For now, though, I think we can lick our wounds for tonight. One final time, the unhappy final, Warriors 101, Rockets 92. Warriors win the Western Conference Finals 4-3, and the Rockets go home with a season that, while overachieving nearly everyone's expectations, still feels bitter because of just how damn close they were to taking this Game 7 and what almost undoubtedly would have led to the team's first title since 1995. For now, though, again, thanks to you guys for listening, and thanks to the Rockets for giving us such a fun team to follow all year long. They did a hell of a job, and despite a very frustrating and bitter end to Game 7, it's incredible what those guys have done, and I think only better things are in store from them in the years ahead. And of course, we'll all have it broken down for better or for worse, but ultimately I think for better, much better, right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.